The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Some breaking news out of Ukraine. That is where Russia has confirmed it is pulling back forces from two areas in the Kharkiv region. And it comes after Ukrainian forces this week staged quite a successful counteroffensive in the area and have recaptured two key cities.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, whoever thought, whoever thought you'd hear that? Is that not crazy? 700 square miles. That, I'll tell you, I'm a little stunned by that news. Now, of course, the U.S. has dumped billions of dollars of technology into Ukraine, as well as many of our allies, in the effort to push Vladimir Putin back. But really, when Vladimir Putin first began to do his, quote, and I'm using air quotes here, military and strategic exercises right on the border of Ukraine, U.S. said, hey, they're going to invade. And Vladimir Putin's, no, that's silly. We're just doing exercises. And, of course, what happened? He invaded, right? He went in. And when he did that, all the experts who were monitoring this said 48 hours. That'll be it. He'll have Kyiv. And like Crimea, that country will be his. He rolled into Crimea. Nobody did anything about it. But the Ukrainian people this time said, no, no way. Massive exodus out of the country. The men stayed back. Yeah, many women did, too. And the war effort continued. And to me, it's just absolutely amazing that the war in Ukraine is, to this day, continuing. It's not going the way Russia wanted it to. This weekend, the largest country in the world in terms of land mass, that's Russia. They announced that their troops were withdrawing from the northeastern part of Ukraine after this massive push by these Ukrainian forces in that region. And Russia, they came out and they said, well, the reason for this, for the withdrawal, was so we can get enough troops to the Donbass region in southeastern Ukraine. And that's a region with a large number of Russian speakers. And it's one that, Russia wants to take over and so-called, quote, liberate, right? Denazify, whatever that means. So Ukrainian reports indicate that that Russian troops are now panicking, right? They're actually fleeing whenever Ukrainian forces show up. And that speaks volumes, because these people have something to fight for, right? They're willing to die for what they believe in. And as a result, there's been mass exodus from Russian forces. Of course, those Ukrainian report, what I'm reporting here, that was a Ukrainian report. So take it with a grain of salt. Maybe they aren't all fleeing. In the fog of war, there's often a lot of propaganda, and I just want to be clear on that. But the fact that Russia itself announced its troop withdrawal from Kharkiv, it shows something's not going right for them. And, I sat back, and of course we can look at all the logistics and the strategies behind all this and why this is happening. I instantly, when I heard that news, that they left the northeastern region, and 700 square miles of land was reoccupied by Ukrainian forces. It raised a question for me. It didn't give me an answer, but the word that came to mind was consecration. Is this the fruit? Is this the result of this global consecration that Pope Francis did, consecrating Ukraine and Russia? Because I'm sitting back here, and I'm no military expert or analyst, really. I'm an observer. How does Vladimir Putin, how does he get out of this? How does he exit, right? What's the off-ramp, as people like to say? Because we know Zelensky and Ukraine, they're not going to quit. They're not going to give up. They'll probably fight to the last man. At least that's what they say. So what happens with Vladimir Putin right now? A major conflict with the West. We know what's happening with, natural resources and heating all throughout Europe. What's the exit? We know what's happening with sanctions and all the other things to Vladimir Putin. How does he get out? I don't know. Maybe this is part of it. Maybe this is the beginning of the end. Maybe this is the beginning of the end of that particular war. And I hope it is. I mean, quite often, it's not like a light switch being turned. Things often are incremental in the way they proceed. And I think that this might be step one. It's good news. I think we should rejoice over it. I think we should pray in thanksgiving for it. We should continue to pray for conversion. We should continue to pray for unity. We should continue to pray for healing and peace. Those are the things that we need to do. And It's something I'm doing on a daily basis. So it's kind of an affirmation for me. I pray every day for that intention. I know you probably do. I pray for Vladimir Putin. I pray for Xi Jinping. I pray for Joe Biden. I pray for all these world leaders who really their decisions affect countless millions, in fact, billions of human lives. And it's an unbelievable, unbelievable responsibility. So, continue to pray. We'll do that. In fact, coming up is the chaplet in about 50 minutes. So if you have an important prayer intention or you just want to join a prayer force, there's a ton of people praying every afternoon for God's mercy. And I think that's what's needed more than ever. We need mercy, 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 not justice, we need mercy in the world to mitigate these problems. I don't know how much of the Queen's funeral you've been following. Just a quick update for you if you haven't had a chance to see any of it today. It's a long, drawn-out process. We'll talk much more about it perhaps in the future. But Queen Elizabeth's body's being flown from Scotland, where she died, to London today. And I was watching part of the military tributes and the very somber, very well-choreographed, honor guard that she had. It was pretty amazing to watch. Her body's going to lie in state starting Wednesday. It's going to be at Westminster Palace, and that'll go all the way through next Monday. Then her funeral is going to be held there at the Abbey as well. And, of course, huge crowds are expected for the viewing. The funeral will have many heads of state going to London for the funeral, including our own. President Joe Biden will be there. Speaking of Vladimir Putin, he's not going to be there. I mean, you might say that's not a surprise, but he did take a departure from the war and the rhetoric with the West, and he was very complimentary. I forgot exactly what his quote was, so I don't want to misquote him, but what he said was actually very kind and dignified of the passing of Queen Elizabeth. And I think he chose not to be there for a couple reasons. One, of course, the conflict, but secondly, the controversy that perhaps it would bring. So it's not clear yet who will be representing the Catholic Church at the funeral, if anyone at all. And there are some speculations. I saw one report saying, will President Biden, invite President Trump to the funeral? I don't know how all that works, but who shows up will be very, very telling. It'll be interesting to see. Speaking of President Trump, speaking of Joe Biden and elections, we are quickly, in fact, we are at a breakneck speed approaching the 2020 midterm elections. But there's still some unsettled questions from 2 years ago, right? I saw a report today, and take what I'm about to say with a kind of a grain of salt. I mean, I'll throw it out to you. I'll give you what I've seen. And again, I just want to get you plugged into what's being said, and you make the decision on a lot of this stuff. There was a report in the Washington Examiner, and they were reporting on a new investigation into record keeping. They looked at 100 key 2020 battleground states, 100 key 2020 battleground states. Now, again, I'll just throw this out. Take this report with a grain of salt because it comes from the America First Policy Institute, which is aligned with the former president, Donald Trump. However, I'm just, if the reporting is true, right, if what they are reporting on, and I don't see why maybe it wouldn't be, then what they're finding is worrisome. You know, federal law requires counties to retain all their voting documentation, right, for about 22 months, almost two full years, 22 months after an election in, just in case there's an audit, right, an audit's called. The Institute, as I said, they examined 100 counties. You know what they found? They found that 94 of them out of 100, right? 94 of them had thrown away their documents or they were handling them very sloppily. As a result, the Institute said in some cases they have these huge gaps. So for those who really feel the election had been stolen, that's some news for you. But again, why? Why would 94 out of 100 counties like this not keep better records? I don't know. Maybe there's a very logical reason for it. New laws regulating things like voter ID and a number of so-called red states are being scrutinized. But it appears, that most of them are having the opposite effect than what politicians and media pundits were predicting. In fact, people from the president on down said these laws would stop people from voting. But Georgia's turnout during the primaries, guess what? It increased 168% over 2018. Iowa had 123% increase. Texas saw half a percentage increase. And Florida's numbers were the same as 2018. So as I said, that, my friends, is some food for thought. Boy, we're going to be immersed, though, aren't we? I don't know how you feel about it. You know, I feel this way like I do with pledge drives, right? I feel like I just had one, right? People say, oh, my gosh, didn't you just have one? And I say, yeah, we did. It was about 3-4 months ago, right? It feels the same way with these elections. We just feel like we came out of one, and we're still not out of the other one. There's still talk about it, right? I mean, Donald Trump has not been in office, you know, for, what, a year and a half now, almost two, and still he's filling the headlines. It's pretty wild. So there'll be much more in the days ahead. I'll try to give you a balanced look. I'll also try to give you a faith-filled view on a lot of what's happening. I do want to share with you, and Bob Destro is going to be stopping by, and we'll get his take on this. I want to take a look at one of the big issues this election, too. I want to look at abortion. I want to look at religious freedom, but I'm seeing in the Chicago market ads that are really targeting pro-life candidates, right? Making them look like they're these horrible men who are going to just, you know, take away the right of a woman to choose. And we're seeing a lot of people, you know, run on that particular platform. So the Democrats, I think this round are going to be really camping out on the fall of Roe and what that means. Coming up a little later, we'll talk about it as well, because the vice president, she wants to do away with the filibuster. She wants to kind of codify Roe. We'll get into that. But, you know, the most vocal opponents of abortion in this country, believe it or not, they are people of faith. And of course, there are atheists and those who oppose abortion simply on reason, right, on pure scientific and secular moral grounds. But the vast majority of opponents are people who have some kind of faith, like you, like me, right? Then there are people who claim to have faith who support abortion. Right? And they're the ones that kill me. Oh, so frustrating when I hear that. Yeah, really? Of course, they're also a minority when it comes to abortion supporters, but they do exist. You know, as Catholics, unfortunately, we know that. I remember during the decision for Dobbs, when that was leaked and people were hanging outside of Justice Kavanaugh's place. I mean, there were signs being held up there and outside in front of the Supreme Court. You know, Catholics for choice, you know, Catholics for abortion. I mean, it's like, no, Catholics, a true Catholic is not, right? It's not for abortion. There are some people now suing the state of Florida, which has enacted a law that prohibits abortion after 15 weeks because they claim the law violates their religious freedom. There's a Jewish group that says that, you know, the ban limits the free exercise of religion because they claim that Jewish law compels them to terminate a pregnancy. And I just want to quote this for you. Quote, if necessary to protect the health, mental, and physical well-being of a woman or for many other reasons not permitted under the act. They also say that, quote, the law prohibits Jewish women from practicing their faith freely, free of government intrusion, and thus violates their privacy right and religious freedom, end of quote. Okay, so that's a Jewish group. You've got a satanic group, the Satanic Temple. They're making a very similar claim. This is part of their religion. And they're being denied their right to freely exercise their religion. I'm joined today by the great Professor Robert Destro, Professor of Law at Columbus School of Law, Catholic University of America. He's been with us many times, the co-author of the book, Religious Liberty in a Pluralistic Society. It's good to have him back with us once again. Professor, thank you for your time. Good afternoon.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
I'm delighted. Boy, it's bizarre what's happening here. You know, the casual observer, to somebody who just might see this, what these women in Florida are claiming, and even what the Satanic Temple is claiming, some might say, hey, that's a solid case. You know, what about the Church of Satan? What about somebody whose religion mandates or dictates this? If there's a belief that abortion is necessary to religious observance, why can't they practice it? They should be allowed to do that. How do you respond to that?
Well, you can make all kinds of arguments based on religion that you should have a pass from the law. I mean, people have been doing that for a long time, and sometimes the courts buy it, and other times they don't. You know, but the idea that you get a pass from the criminal law, you know, yeah, because your religion requires you to take certain steps. And it's debatable whether or not it does, but, you know, let's set that aside and just say, look, you know, the law, the constitutional law does not require you to get an exemption from criminal law.
Hey, Professor, I don't know whether you're on a headset or kind of close to your friend. You got muffled there towards the end of that. I just want to give you some.
Okay, no. The First Amendment doesn't require exemptions from criminal law.
Yeah, all right, great. You know, the claim that's being made, though, is that these laws restricting abortion, they're Christian-based. So they can't be constitutional since they support one religion over another. I mean, that's one of the claims I heard argued.
Well, that claim has been made since the beginning of the abortion debate, and the courts have rejected it consistently. All law is based on some sense of morality. And if we start getting into where does it come from, I mean, private property is based on the idea that you shall not steal.
Right.
You know, you shall not murder. You know, is certainly derived from lots of different areas of law. The courts won't get into that.
So let me give you one other case here. One claim, another one that I saw, said that under American law, religious observance can't include violence. But wouldn't that be, you know, I guess Christian-based? Don't other religions allow or even demand violence? I think of what's written in the Quran or some other things.
Well, I'm not exactly sure where whoever is saying that gets that. I mean, that it can't include violence. What does that
right,
mean?
Right.
I mean, today people say, you know, making you feel bad is violent.
Right.
You know,
that's
so true. So the idea that once again, it's not a question of violence as such. It's a question of what are we talking about? Are we talking about assault?
Yeah.
You know, if that's the case, then one could argue that when the bishop puts chrism on the baby's forehead,
right,
then the baby didn't consent, so that's an act of violent assault.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, but it's all consented. So, I mean, this is the whole idea is they're trying to figure out a way to use federal law to get around the Dobbs decision.
Right. Any chance they can find a loophole to do that?
Always find a loophole. Yeah. The question is whether or not the courts buy it.
Right.
And now that Dobbs has sent this back to the states,
right,
it really then becomes a question of state law.
Right.
You know, whether or not the state courts want to recognize any such thing.
So do legislatures now need to address the issue? Is that really where we're going to see the battleground?
Well, yeah, that's what we're seeing, the battleground already. We saw the vote in Kansas.
Yep.
We're going to see a vote coming up in Michigan. I mean, this is the court thankfully sent it back to the states.
Right.
Now, you know, for the pro-life forces, you got to just be prepared to duke it out in the trenches.
You got it. Well, Professor, I'm grateful for your time. I only have about a minute or two left. Let's take a call or two. I also want to get your book a quick plug, so I think people should be reading that. Steve is in Bozeman, Montana. He wants to join the conversation for you. If you want to join us, as I said, we only have a few minutes, but feel free to dial in at 888-914-9149. Steve, good afternoon.
Hi. Good afternoon, everybody. Hey, I just want to check in. There are, on a related topic, there are a lot of South American cultures and even Native American cultures that incorporate like psychedelics into their religious practices. And I don't think that we allow things like ayahuasca or like mushrooms, psilocybin, just because it's part of a traditional religious ceremony.
Right.
But on the other hand, I have heard that like peyote, for example, can be used in Native American ceremonies. And so I kind of wanted to find out, where is the line that is drawn between allowing substances or some things that are listed as criminal and then, like, you know, things that are just way too far to be allowed. And obviously, like, abortion, I think, is one of those things that's just way too far on the other end.
Right.
But
that's good.
I'll hang up and listen to your guests. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you, Stephen.
Yeah, that's a great question, and in fact, it's addressed by an important Supreme Court case, which then led to a cascade of legislation that we call the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, that involved exactly that, the use of peyote in religious ceremonies by the Native American Church. And the Supreme Court held, and kind of a lot of people you know, reacted. Well, the Supreme Court said that the First Amendment does not require an exemption from generally applicable law. So that's why Congress went in and adopted the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. A number of states did the same thing. So the short answer to your question is it's going to depend on what the controlled substances of the laws of the states in which you're seeking to practice. You might come up with a religion that says we like to use fentanyl. There's no way that any court is going to force that.
It's wacky, huh? Your book, Religious Liberty and Pluralistic Society, where do you see religious liberty today? Are things changing? I know we talked about that in the past. Are things getting more intense for the free exercise thereof? Or how do you read it?
All over. There's been attacks on churches all over the country. I'm involved in a survey right now of those practices. And if you want to get on the RFI.org website, you can see kind of what we've just done, put out a threat assessment, you know, about churches. You know, religious liberty is under attack across the board, not only in this country, but in other countries. I mean, we've been seeing it in places like France. We see an ongoing genocide of Christians in Nigeria. I mean, it's happening all over. And so the situation is grim, but you know, what are you going to do? You got to just, you know, fight each battle as it occurs.
Yeah, in fact, I think you probably know Nathaniel Hurd. He's going to be joining us. We're going to talk about the Religious Freedom Institute report on church vandalism. It's I've never seen anything like that. It seems to be intensifying. There's not a whole lot of reporting on it, but. What do you think is driving that? Why is the church the target of that type of vandalism?
Well, you know, I mean, I'll let Nathaniel speak to that in greater length, but I can tell you from a historical perspective, there was very little reporting on the beheading of priests in France either. Look, this has been going on for a long time. It's not just happening here. It's happening in other countries. It's happening in Central and South America, which we're trying to pin down. I mean, you know, basically the church is under attack because it stands for immutable principles. Yeah. And people who don't like those principles, then they get upset.
Yeah. Good point, too. You're right. There was very little reporting on the beheading of priests. I've often reported what happened in Rwanda, Africa, before the genocide took place there, too. They saw this flurry of attacks on churches and desecrations of statues and so much more. So, but it happens in our own country here. It always gives me pause. I think people should be well aware of it and know their history. Professor, thanks for being here. Your book, if people want to read it or get a hold of it, Religious Liberty and Pluralistic Society, what's the best way to do that?
Well, you can get it. It's actually a textbook, so you would look at Carolina Academic Press.
All right, sounds great. Thank you, Professor. Look forward to talking to you again. Have a great day. Professor Robert Destro, Professor of Law, Columbus School of Law, Catholic University of America. And if you want that textbook for your collection, that book, Religious Liberty in a Pluralistic Society, for your bookshelf, you should see my bookshelf. How many different types of books that I have on it. You can check it out. All right, I got to take a short pause. When we come back, though, I do think it's important. I saw a piece on the state of education freedom in your state, and especially religious freedom, what we're seeing in terms of the desecration of churches all across the country. You know, I would check out, if you have an opportunity, Religious Freedom Institute on the increase of church vandalism after the overturning of Roe v. Wade. And I just have a personal perspective on it as well. We could talk much more about it, but you know, we can look at whether it's, you know, people's anger over the fall of Roe or what, you know, you can try to come up with a lot of temporal reasons. I think it's spiritual. I really do. I think this is Satan. This is demonic. I think you can see the lashing out, the hatred and the destruction, so indicative of those dark type of forces. But we'll talk about it. I'll bring you up to speed. We'll give you a big picture of what's happening in the country when I return. Stay with me.
Your news. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Your news now.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Your daily update with Drew. You're listening to Drew Mariani on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. It's a delight to have you here. And if you want to join the conversation, here's the number. It's 888-914-9149. If you are just joining me, we just had a discussion about people erroneously claiming religious freedom protects their so-called right to abortion. And I knew when Dobbs, was underway and Roe fell, that you would see this in all sorts of different levels. In fact, a little bit later in today's broadcast, we'll talk a little bit about this. I don't know if you heard MSNBC anchor Joe Scarborough and what he claims, how Jesus never talked about abortion. I'm going to play you some audio. Now, when you hear this, it will make your blood boil. The vice president, of course, Harris, claiming she can't wait to kill the old filibuster, right? So she can cast her vote to enshrine, abortion rights. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. What's happening behind the scenes is all this is being played out in Capitol Hill and across the country. We're seeing churches vandalized, right? We're seeing. I see a demonic response to this. People claim religious freedom to protect the right to kill a child, which makes no sense to me, right? When you break it down like that, it's macabre and barbaric. But what religious freedom under our Constitution should certainly mean is that people of faith are free to state what they believe without being violently attacked for it, right? We have a freedom of speech, right? We should be able to express ourselves. Fortunately, that's not the case, and it's not happening. We already know about the attacks on Catholic churches around the country ever since Dobbs, not just the decision, but the leak back on May 2nd. The Religious Freedom Institute has documented many of those accounts, and it's actually staggering when you see the frequency and the intensity of these. They didn't start then. They actually went back all the way to the George Floyd riots back in 2020 in Minneapolis when somebody set fire to pews at that beautiful Basilica of St. Mary in downtown. You might remember them. And they just released a report. And let me just share what the Institute said. They said, quote, on May 28th, 2020, people associating themselves with massive protests against the murder of George Floyd set fire to pews in the Basilica of St. Mary in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and over that weekend also attacked churches in Dallas, Denver, Los Angeles, Louisville, New York City, and a Catholic bookstore in Chicago run by the Daughters of St. Paul, an order of nuns. The daughters locked themselves upstairs to escape the attackers who entered the bookstore. End of quote. Now get this. The Institute reported that, from the arson in Minneapolis to the present, offenders have attacked at least 174 Catholic sites across 38 states. I want to repeat that number because it's stunning. 174 Catholic sites across 38 states and the District of Columbia. Many states, many of these sites, just to give you some perspective on how vast the number is, those responsible committed multiple crimes. So it's not just one event. And I just sit back and I think, man, imagine if this was some other organization. What if there were, let's just say, 174 Planned Parenthood centers that were attacked, right? Imagine if Catholics did that or somebody else did that, pro-lifers did that, right? What kind of response we get if in 38 states, 174 Planned Parenthoods were attacked, or let's say it was Jewish synagogues or some other place, anything. The reporting on it has been, it's there. But I think it deserves greater voice. That's why I've invited Nathaniel Hurd, director of the Religious Freedom Institute's North America Action Team and leader and lead author of the report to join us today. And you can find more about them by going to their website, religiousfreedominstitute.org. Hey, Nathaniel, thank you for your time. It's good to have you with us. Good afternoon.
It's good to be with you.
So how does this violence against Catholic churches compare to what happened, say, in the 1960s when, there were a lot of churches that were being burned back there? If you think about that time, there was a lot of civil unrest in the country. Any comparison at all or not really?
Well, There's one major difference. The difference is that back then there was a consensus that if you attacked a place of worship, you would be condemned and the government would take forceful action. And that's what we've seen over the decades. What's been happening with Catholic churches is a departure from that. It seems as if there's now there are two standards of law enforcement and justice, one for everybody else and then one for people who are pro-life, pro-marriage, and pro-family. It really has been stunning the degree to which the Department of Justice, Department of Homeland Security, and the FBI has been silent in the wake of these attacks on Catholic churches over the last 2 years.
So why the Catholic Church? Why target them? And I'm sure we're not alone. I'm sure there's other institutions, too, that may be under attack. If so, how frequent is that? And why in particular the Catholic Church? I mean, your numbers are stunning. 174 Catholic sites across 38 states. I mean, that's very telling.
Well, and just to put a finer point on it, of the attacks, there are at least 26 instances in which arson was committed against a Catholic site, mostly churches, some schools as well. Certainly, Catholic churches are not alone among, for example, Christian houses of worship in being attacked, but we're not aware of anything like this over the last 2 years. And in particular, it's not just the volume, it's also the national scale as well, 38 states plus the District of Columbia. Again, at the local level, you will find churches here and there being attacked, but we've just not seen anything like it. You asked the question, why the Catholic Church?
Right.
I think it's because everybody knows that when you see a Catholic church in your community, it is pro-life, it is pro-marriage, it is pro-family. And, you know, for example, there are plenty of evangelical churches who have the same views. But for most people who may not know much about them, they won't know one way or the other whether it's pro-life. Whereas you know for sure a Catholic church is pro-life.
Wow. Sure. Let's go to Lexington, Kentucky. Eli's listening to us there. He's got a question for you. Eli, good afternoon. You're on the air with Nathaniel Hurd.
Good afternoon. I think the gentleman, answered my question. Why they are singling out Catholic churches, not other denominations? I am from Kentucky, and I'm just puzzled why the Catholic churches.
Yeah. So are there others? I mean, you kind of answered his question just a moment ago. We know where the Catholic Church stands. Are there other groups that they say, hey, we don't like you because of X? Or is it you know, I don't know, maybe you can give me a percentage. 90% of these cases, Catholic churches, is 99%, 75%? I mean, do you have any assessment of how it breaks down?
It's overwhelmingly Catholic churches. Now, at the same time, we do give an example in the report of a Baptist church in Portland, Oregon. There's a building that they own. They've got a number of tenants, including the administrative offices of a pregnancy resource center. And one day, a mob showed up, 75 to 100 people. They smashed windows. They spray-painted vile graffiti over the building. Because of their tenants, because of this pro-life pregnancy resource center. But in terms of attacks on churches where it was very clear there was some sort of anti-Christian animus, overwhelmingly it's been Catholic churches. And I think it's because everybody knows what the Catholic Church teaches about these things. The church has been the backbone of the pro-life movement for decades, obviously now shoulder to shoulder with our evangelical brothers and sisters. But no one is more prominent on this than the Catholic Church.
So is the government responding to this? I'm hoping and assuming they are. You know, you're not seeing a ton of coverage of this in your mainstream media. Maybe on a local level you are, but what has the response been? What is awareness like? Maybe you can address those 2 points.
Sure. On the media side of things, there's the national and then there's the local. At the local level, a lot of local media outlets have been pretty good, whether it's covering the police beat or something else. At the national level, I mean, I'm only aware of maybe a handful of national stories about the attacks on Catholic churches and then more recently on pro-life organizations coming from the major media outlets. Otherwise, it's been conservative press, local press, and then faith-based press, whether Catholic or other. In terms of law enforcement, certainly there are some instances where there have been at least a few arrests. There have been investigations and prosecutions. But it's not the... At least the impression that we have so far is it's not the norm. And at the national level, it's been silence at the political leadership from DOJ, from FBI, from the Department of Homeland Security. The only time they've really had much to say about this at all has been when members of Congress have pressed them about it. That's why at RFI, we're going to be taking an investigation over the coming year to really look very carefully, working closely with former law enforcement professionals to look at, okay, what exactly was the response at the local level, which is a little bit harder to determine from afar.
Yeah, my guest today, if you want to join us, by the way, is Nathaniel Herr, director of the Religious Freedom Institute's North America Action Team. And we're taking a look at these reports of increased violence against Catholic churches in particular. I don't know your advice in terms of what believers should do to fight back. I mean, so often you see church officials come out and pray for the perpetrators and even offer forgiveness for them. But we've seen tabernacles stolen. We've seen churches set afire. We've seen statues destroyed. What should believers do? It's hard, when our own Catholic president and Speaker of the House are vocal supporters of abortion rights. And this, I really think, is also a byproduct of that. I think people, after the Dobbs case, as we pointed out, really responded in kind of heated fervor targeting these churches. So what does one do?
There's a huge variance between dioceses and between parishes. There are a few dioceses that I'm aware of that have full-time staff that are dedicated to security in the diocese. That is the exception. There are some dioceses that will have an interagency task force at the chancery to support parishes in improving their security. But then there are other dioceses that don't appear to be taking the threat nearly as seriously. To your point, I think there are some parishes and some dioceses that think that if they just kind of keep their heads down, then they're going to be left alone. So I think, one, what can the faithful do? The faithful can insist on preparedness. We don't want our parishes to become bunkers. But at the same time, you can improve the physical security. You can make sure that staff and volunteers and members of the parish are trained. There are a whole range of things that can be done. We're actually... You mentioned the report that we just issued. We're in the process of consulting with a range of security professionals to gather their best recommendations on how churches and others can improve the security. The only thing that I would mention is that we need to engage with our elected representatives, our local law enforcement agencies, and really insist that they do their job, that there be an equal standard of justice and law enforcement.
Yeah, I agree. Let's grab a call or two. 888-914-9149. Gary in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. You're on the air. Good afternoon.
Hey, Drew. I'm a practicing Catholic, and I've had a business for over 30 years, and I know all my Catholics. And I'd say probably 80% of the Catholics are pro-choice. So I think when you think about church, our Catholic church is pro-life, I'd say probably half the people in there believe in pro-choice. And I see that firsthand.
I hope your stats are way off. It'd be tragic if the numbers were that high.
Yeah.
But I think there is a certain degree of truth, Nathaniel, to what he says. I mean, there are some Catholics. Like I was sharing before you came on in a previous piece that I saw when the Dobbs decision leaked. People were outside the Supreme Court building, and people are holding up signs. And this is what's so confusing, that say Catholics for abortion or Catholics for choice. And when you look at those signs, I'm thinking, no, Catholics aren't for abortion, although it's very confusing when the Speaker of the House and the President, who are, very vocal so-called Catholics, seem to champion that cause. There's a lot of confusion there as well. Your thoughts to him, and do we have any number in terms of how, in response to his comments about, those within the institution himself embrace this philosophy?
There certainly are, at the level of the individual Catholic, there certainly are some Catholics who reject the church's teaching on abortion, and I think that number has it varies by generation. I mean, I think one of the great stories of the pro-life movement and, you know, the march, including the March for Life, is that younger Catholics tend to be more pro-life than their parents in some cases. But it's true. There are inarguably some Catholics, including some of the very prominent ones that you mentioned, who are pro-abortion. But at the same time, if we're thinking about this from the point of view of the criminals who are going after Catholic churches, they're not going to make those distinctions, right? They know that the Catholic Church, it's what its teachings are on abortion. They know the bishops have been very active on these things over the years, and many of the most prominent leaders in the pro-life movement over the years have been Catholic as well. So Amen. It is true that sometimes you'll find faithful in the pews who are, you know, maybe don't accept church teaching on abortion, but in general, the perception that most people have, and I think rightfully so, is that the church is pro-life.
Yeah. Well, stay with me. I take just a short pause. When we come back, we'll take a few more telephone calls. If you want to join us, feel free to dial in. It's putting our finger on the pulse of something that is happening here in the country. A rise in church vandalism, a real attack on people of faith. I know the USCCB, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, has also been tracking this. The Religious Freedom Institute issued a report. You can check that out. In fact, check out their website. It's religiousfreedominstitute.org. You get plugged in. But if you want to join the conversation, feel free to give us a quick ring at 888-914-9149. We're back with more right after this.
We go there. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio line, is hiring today with several positions throughout the U.S. Visit relevantradio.com/forester to learn more about how you can find your vocation with COF, an Illinois Life Insurance Society, not licensed in all states.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, live, coming up. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, it's great to be here trying to give you a look at life you will not find anywhere else. Coming up in about 10 minutes or so, we will pray the chaplet. Feel free to join me for that. And I'll share with you something that Joe Scarborough said that will make your blood boil. We'll get to that after the chaplet. Wait till you hear it. I don't want to get into it yet, but we'll pray for him, certainly. If you are just tuning in, I'm just putting my finger on the pulse of what's been happening and continues to happen in our country, talking about church vandalism. I am joined this afternoon by a wonderful organization that has been monitoring this, and the director joins me today, Nathaniel Hurd. And go to their website, check out religiousfreedominstitute.org. One of the most stunning stats I've seen recently comes from a report that the Institute put out that said from the arson in Minneapolis to the present, offenders have attacked 174 Catholic sites across 38 states in the District of Columbia. And at many sites, those responsible committed multiple crimes. So, stunning numbers. And we're just looking at why this is happening, where it's heading, what it can lead up to, and what we can do to make a difference. Nathaniel, thanks for being here. Let's go right back to the phones. Janice has a comment for you. Janice in La Crosse, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Drew. You always do a great job, and your guest sounds great. However, Catholics are not doing the right job. They're not doing their job. I mean, we have got, you know, a bishop here in La Crosse who actually threw out Father Altman out of La Crosse on Alaska because he said you cannot be Catholic and vote Democrat. He could have just said you cannot be Catholic and vote, you know, they will not for abortion. Catholics, we got a quote devout Catholic, you know, president. This is unbelievable that the Pope, which he won't do anything, an old Pelosi that's already gone over there. No, we're not doing enough. This guy should have been excommunicated. But, you know, he's now flying people from state to state for abortions. Okay. I mean, come on.
Janice, thanks. I love the passion. I only have a few minutes, so I'm going to let Nathaniel respond. And look, I'm sure you hear this from all across the spectrum. There are people who say, wow, this is really horrible, to a lot of people who think that more should be done, including excommunicating the president. Where do you see all this leading? You heard her comments. How broad is that spectrum that we speak of?
Well, I think, I mean, in the end, we're called to be faithful, to respond to these things. Yes, with charity, but also with fortitude. And I think, you know, it's the responsibility from the bishops all the way down to the lay faithful to press lawmakers, be they whether they're Catholic or other, to do their job, to take their constitutional responsibility seriously, to protect members of the public, regardless of where they whether they agree with them on something contentious like abortion. I mean, you mentioned several times that this is reflective of something broader that's happening in the United States. This is exactly a point that we make in the report, that, you know, over the last 10 and a half years, you have seen this huge increase in the targeting of religious people and institutions who are pro-life and pro-marriage and pro-family. Lawsuits, public smear campaigns, hostile government action, and really problematic legislation. And it's no surprise that some people would take it even further and commit acts of violence.
It's such a great point, too. I just think about what was happening with the FBI when they're investigating parents who show up at school board meetings. We're facing a situation where, you know, we could see tactics or maybe even tacit just approval from the government for this kind of violence. I mean, I think more should be done. More should be spoken out against, you know, not only situations like that, but when there are these acts of violence. You know, I think there should be every effort put forward to protect and to, I guess, bring to justice those who perpetrate these type of crimes.
When the response is weak, it contributes to a culture of impunity. And a culture of impunity breeds more violence. We've seen that here in the United States, and we see that around the world as well.
Well, Nathaniel, I want to thank you for being here. I'm grateful for your efforts there. And if people want to read the actual report, what's the best way to do that?
Go to our website, RFI.org, and you'll find it pretty easily available on our homepage.
All right, so it's RFI.org, not ReligiousFreedomInstitute.org.
RFI. Both of them work.
All right, well, good. That's good. RFI is a lot easier. It's
much less of a mouthful.
Yeah, three letters versus a bunch more. Hey, Nathaniel, thanks. Appreciate you being here. Keep up your great work.
Thanks, Drew.
All right,
thank you.
Nathaniel Hurd. Again, check out RFI.org. Easy way to remember. Check out the report. Share it with others. Give it to your parish. You know, make people aware. We talked about what to do, you know, when there's vandalism. And, you know, I think a little heads up is also important. I know a lot of church communities, when a lot of this was taking place or there was threats that maybe Catholic churches would be targeted, they got together, the men of the parish, the women of the parish, and they had strategies for what happens if somebody comes in as a shooter. You know, there are people that could be on watch. You know, there's a lot of different things you can do that are very logistic, and I think that's also important. Above all, I just go back to prayer. Please pray. Pray for those people. These are very confused individuals. You know, there's no question in my mind they are very confused. But I also think of it on a spiritual level, and I'll zoom out for just a second, because back in 1981, I'll give you a little snapshot of history. Between the year 1980 and 1981, nearly every statue, well, I shouldn't say every, but just a majority of statues of the Virgin Mary in Kibeho, Rwanda, in Rwanda, really, at the entrance of parish churches, they were either mutilated, they were destroyed, or they were stolen, right? So in some cases, this happened a number of times when, you know, statues were ultimately either restored or they were replaced, but it went on. And some vandals were caught, but it really wasn't possible to clarify the situation. But one thing really came to the fore. What happened was, you know, this was a precursor to what was going to erupt in Rwanda. You know, in 94, just a decade later, there would be this horrible genocide, as you know. The desecrations occurred immediately. In fact, this is really the most important point in terms of what I'm trying to get to. Those desecrations occurred, we're talking 1980 to 81. The Virgin appeared in Rwanda, Africa on November 28, 1981. So they were a precursor to the Virgin's appearances there. And if you're not familiar with what happened in Kibeho, Rwanda, the Blessed Mother, who has been appearing in every habitable continent in the world in unprecedented frequency today, appeared to some school children in a very impoverished, very remote outback of a place called Kibeho. And the apparitions among other things, in the years that would follow, the Virgin Mary appeared to 1989. I was there for one of those apparitions. I traveled to Africa with a film crew in 89 and documented her last apparition. The Virgin announced major coming cataclysms, including genocide. And I didn't report on that because I thought it was just too extreme. I thought, oh my gosh, how do you report on that, right? And it was to my mistake. I learned a big lesson there. She also warned of strange new viruses and diseases that would rise. She talked of the impurity in the world. You know, she talked, like Faustine and so many others, of the return of Jesus Christ. The time frame I was struck by, the 1980s, and she talked about these events occurring in the near future, which might, who knows, be the present time. But what was at the heart of this? What preceded it? I think something very demonic. And I think that's what we're seeing in our own culture today. When you look at the United States of America, land of the free, where we should have the free exercise of religion, and you see 174 Catholic sites vandalized, set ablaze, having Molotov cocktails thrown at them, graffitied, statues destroyed, million-dollar tabernacles stolen, 38 states across the country, across this nation, along with the District of Columbia, it should give us all pause. It should. It's food for thought. I always just want to give you another look at these issues. I want to report on them because I think they're often underreported. But we're not to fear. We're to have hope. We're to trust in the mercy of God. That's what these apparitions are all about. And the one thing we can do to make a difference is pray. We'll do that when I return.